Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The Bulls are battling the reigning NBA champion Milwaukee Bucks in round one of the NBA playoffs. Keep it on the score as we continue our coverage of this huge series for the Bulls. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Chicago Bulls. Live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, and Odyssey Station. The Score!
You know how hard it is to compete against the defending champs. We went out there and showed it defensively. We was tied in together. We showed each other we could do it. We could communicate. We could come together and withstand, you know, the punches thrown at us. You know, we got down 9-0 beginning in the quarter. We didn't let that break us. We kept picking it up, Now we understand and know, you know, how hard we got to play defensively. You know, offensively, I guarantee you we're not going to shoot like we shot tonight, but games like this, you got to be able to rely on your defense to give you an opportunity to win. And, you know, we had an opportunity, a couple of mistakes here and there, late in the fourth quarter, kind of let it get away from us. But, you know, we definitely, that's a good learning test for us tonight to show how hard we got to play.
DeMar DeRozan, after the Bulls' loss in Milwaukee Game 1 of the series, 93-86, and DeMar, rough night shooting, not nearly good enough. Bulls need a whole lot better from him. They need a whole lot better from Zach LaVine. 6 of 25 shooting for DeMar DeRozan, a guy who was just stellar for most of the regular season. When the Bulls need him most, he needs to show up. And it didn't really happen night one. And he said, I guarantee you that 6 for 25 ain't going to happen again. Chris Ronji on Score Overnights tonight. We will hear from the manager, David Ross, after the Cubs beat Tampa Bay at Wrigley last night, 4-2. We'll get his comments after the game. But first, want to take a moment to continue the Bulls discussion as we visit with Cody Westerlund of 670thescore.com. He is the editor of the website. He covers the Bulls. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook. Cody Westerlund is visiting with us now. Hello, Cody. How are you?
How you doing, Ronji? Good to be on talking some playoff buckets here.
I know, and I feel good about it, although I don't feel, I don't know exactly how to feel about game one, because, and I've been talking about this, there are good things about it, you can look at it and feel encouraged, but also feel like they missed a huge opportunity that they may not get back. So as you look at what happened game one, Bulls and Bucks, how do you see it?
I think I'm actually more enthused than I would be disappointed when it comes to the action and the play that took place. And I say that through the prism of, you know, whether the Bulls won one game one or not, I don't think they were going to win the series. So it's a gut punch in letting a golden opportunity get away. But there's also the fear, right, that the Bulls weren't going to be able to compete at all with the Bucks, and the Bulls did almost everything you need to do to compete at a high level with that Bucks team, other than making shots and shooting the ball well. But when it came to defensive effort, tenacity, just attention to detail on some of this stuff, diving on the floor, like that was a whole new look Bulls team than what we had seen since late February. So I was enthused from the perspective of, I think this is going to be a pretty hard fought series, and the Bulls are going to make the Bucks earn their advancement a little bit more than we might have thought before.
Well, we saw DeMar DeRozan after the game say, no way in hell, I'm going to go 6-for-25 next time around. And I believe him. I believe he's right. I believe he'll be a whole lot better. But I also think the Bucks aren't going to shoot as poorly as they did in game one either. So when you mentioned something a moment ago about the tenacity and the defense they played, is the poor shooting a function of what the Bulls did defensively, or is it something else?
Well, the truth's always in the middle, right? I would give the Bulls a lot of credit for their defensive effort because, look, this is a team that had just had so many communication breakdowns, so many mental miscues on defense late in the regular season. And I think their soul and spirit kind of got sapped a little bit late in the year with injuries and COVID and tough competition and the losing streaks and such. But they ramped it up a level in the playoffs. And I think the Bulls can bring the same intensity tomorrow in game two and for the rest of the series. And I think they did a pretty good job in getting in the Bucks' space. And by that, I mean getting into their bodies, not letting them get where they wanted to on the floor nearly as easily as we'd seen in the four regular season matchups. And the Bulls were throwing their body in front of people. You saw Alex Caruso take a couple charges. DeMar DeRozan was taking charges or attempting to take charges on like two or three or four occasions in that game. Like, all these guys put their body on the line in a way I hadn't seen from these Bulls in a long time outside of Caruso, because that's how he always plays. So I certainly think the Bulls can replicate just getting in the Bucks space again and making that life difficult and slowing them down a little bit. But no, like, Chris Middleton's probably not going to shoot 4-for-13 again. You know, the Bucks as a team aren't going to shoot 10-for-38 again from three-point range. They missed some real good looks at threes. That'll have an uptick. So when DeMar DeRozan gets out there and says he won't shoot 6-for-25 again, well, the Bucks won't either, as you pointed out, and the Bulls will probably still be down a few points in the fourth quarter, and I think make the series competitive. But you'll see a different style of game a little bit tomorrow in game two, but I would still think this is still everything speaks advantage Bucks right now. It's just kind of playing out, I think, maybe a little bit differently than we originally would have expected.
Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score is visiting with us now. Read his work on 670thescore.com. DeMar DeRozan takes a lot of criticism in his career about postseason performance, and you cannot argue with what he did for the Bulls in the regular season. He carried them for most of the year. Is what we saw in game one, does that justify all that criticism, or well, I mean, I don't want to give you an either or question here, but I'll just ask you flat out, is that justified criticism of him after just game one in the postseason this year?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about what worries me in this series, it's exactly what played out with DeMar. So I would probably have to hedge toward yes there. He hasn't been as efficient in the playoffs in his career at any point as he's usually been in the regular season. And that's in part because, you know, you usually play tougher defenses. So you don't expect 6-for-25, but I expect the Bucks to make life really difficult on him. And I think they'll continue to make life difficult on him with Wesley Matthews and Drew Holiday being the two primary defenders on him. And he didn't get enough and enough good looks against those guys in game one. They defended him very well. And I think the Bucks are going to kind of lure the Bulls into the same type of game. Like, the way that played out, the Bucks are perfectly fine with DeMar DeRozan shooting mid-range jumpers. They don't want teams getting to the rim. The Bucks pack the paint better than anyone in the NBA. They have two really good rim protectors in Giannis and Brooke Lopez. They will give up the three. They're not afraid of the Bulls shooting the three-pointer. The Bulls don't shoot it at a high volume in the past, and they haven't shot it well from three-point range in the last couple months of the regular season. So to me, DeMar's going to have the same mindset, right? Like, he's a force of will. He's a force of nature. He's the best player on the team. He's a leader on the team. Like, this is going to happen again. And my fear is that, like, to make it really worthwhile to damage the Bucks, like, he's got to shoot around that 55 or 60% range. And I just don't see him doing that consistently in this series, in any one game even, really, for him to shoot at that high a clip against a team like the Bucks that can lock in on defense and is focused like that. So to me, it feels like this has to be Vooch knocking down his open three-pointers or Zach LaVine getting really hot and dominating from all over the court, because Zach's the one guy the Bulls have that can really do it from three levels. And by that, I mean pull-up threes off the bounce, quickness to get to the rim and finish, and also shoot mid-range if he's comfortable. DeMar doesn't have that pull-up three game, doesn't get right to the rim quite as quickly and easily as Zach can at times. So to me, if I'm a Bulls fan, I wish you could see a little bit more from Zach LaVine aggressiveness and a little less DeMar DeRozan in the mid-range. I'm just afraid the Bulls aren't going to get there, really, if we're talking about this.
But how much does LaVine's knee affect him now?
I don't think it affected him too much in game one. You know, he didn't say it affected him or anything. He played almost 37 minutes. He was going to play low 40s minutes if he didn't get in foul trouble and deal with those five fouls, just the way it was on pace in the first half. And he kind of had that dumb foul inside the final second of the first half to give him his third. Otherwise, Billy Donovan really kind of just upped the minutes of the stars. That was part of the strategy all along in the playoffs against a better team for the Bulls to have a chance. So I don't think his knee's an excuse right now. I mean, there's no doubt after the season that he's going to have to get it looked at. There's no doubt that it's caused him a lot of soreness and I think at times pain over the last couple months. He's probably headed for a knee procedure of some sort in the offseason. But, like, if Billy Donovan's not using it as an excuse and Zach isn't, I just find it hard to sit there and say that's why he wasn't efficient. I think mainly it was the Bucks defense being good. So I would say I think Zach still has it in him to have a really big game in this series and up his play, because especially with 2 days off between games one and two, that's really helpful for Zach. And we know he got some rest at the end of the regular season. That was helpful too. Managed his workload in practice in the week off. So I think he's feeling as good as he can probably feel at this point for the Bulls, all things considered, with his prognosis and outlook long term.
Visiting with Cody Westerlund of 670thescore.com. Read his work there. You mentioned Nikola Vucevic earlier, and it seemed like every time you looked up, he was getting the ball wide open at the top and taking a shot. And he was only 2 of 10 from 3, but I would have to think that the game plan is he's going to continue to take those shots if he's open, that it's not going to be a, well, that didn't work out, we're not going to go that route again, right?
Yeah, and I think that in some ways, because he hasn't really slowed down his three-point attempts too much. I mean, he was shooting 4 or 5 most games in the regular season. Billy said he wants and likes when the Bulls shoot more three-pointers when they're open, and he's going to be open all series. And to be honest, like, I just haven't seen enough from the Bulls as an offense, as a team, as a coaching staff, as an organization, that they're going to have some new genius offensive game plan or creativity to do something other than have Vooch shoot open threes. Like, the other options would be what? Give the ball back to DeMar and have him shoot a mid-range shot, yeah. Right? Give the ball to Zach kind of late in the shot clock and make him work off the bounce and put a lot of stress on him. Because, like, we would have seen it by now, to me, across the regular season, if there was really better options for them offensively than Vooch taking wide open threes. Like, you can't really give the ball to Caruso to create on offense. You can't do it when you give the ball to Javonte Green if he's in, Tristan Thompson. Io Dosunmu had a small role for the Bulls in game one. Like, they only have a couple playmakers, right? Like, you're looking at Patrick Williams and you wish he would seize the day and maybe be that other option offensively and do something more and attack the hoop instead of maybe those Vooch possessions that are three-pointers, kind of tilt those toward Patrick. But he shot 3 times in 23 minutes in game one. He hasn't shown that aggressiveness or comfort when Zach and DeMar have been healthy and leading the way. So to me, it's just, it's not going to flip overnight. Maybe Vooch passes up a few of them in game two, But I would think the Bucks would keep leaving him open. They're comfortable with that as their base principle, and they're certainly comfortable with it when a guy's shooting 2 of 10 after he shot around 30% in the regular season. So I would think Vooch would still get a lot of opportunity in game 2 and 3 and moving forward here.
I get the feeling, Cody. I'm good with the people. I am a man of the people. I listen to what they say. I listen. I finger on the pulse. You ever heard that before? I've got my finger on the pulse of the people, all of them, whether they want it or not. I get the sense they're still not happy with the officiating. Is this a thing we need to let go? Was it fine? Because there were a couple of moments in that game that were pretty bad and maybe possibly game changing.
Yeah, there were two awful calls. Zach LaVine's charge in transition was a terrible call by the officials. Billy Donovan chose not to challenge it because his assistants behind the bench, the smart guys with the iPads and better angles and time to look at that, said they thought it was a charge, so he didn't obviously challenge that. That could have saved Zach a foul and had him play more in the fourth quarter and also given the Bulls 2 points at the free throw line, maybe. And then you're talking about as well the Patrick Williams controversial foul with 2:05 left when Giannis went over his back. Should have been called for a push on that. No doubt the refs missed those two, but like the Bulls got to stop on the ensuing possession, right? And Budenholzer took Giannis out for much of the late minutes of the game, just playing offense, defense, and kind of being totally like galaxy brain on us, right? Like, let's not play the two-time MVP in crunch time because just in case he fouls out, like, it's fine. Bobby Portis playing defense against the Bulls. So the Bulls got to stop on that possession. So big call, but they weren't going to go to the free throw line on the other end on that play. They weren't the bonus yet or anything like that. So I don't think the officiating was in any way an excuse for what transpired in game one, despite two really bad missed calls that certainly hurt the Bulls. Like, it wasn't something they couldn't recover from in any way on the Zach charge. And then the Bulls did end up getting the stop on the ensuing possession that was just really confusing with the P. Will foul as Giannis went over his back. I mean, that was textbook boxing out by P. Will. What we've been asking for, I've complained to you here on the overnight show before, like, there's like 1.5 Bulls who box out in the regular season, and now P. Will's doing it great. He can't get the benefit of the doubt from the officials on that call.
Well, he can't do it anymore now. No more boxing out because he'll just get called for a foul, or at least that'll be in his head. He's never going to box out again, so the officials
maybe
ruined that for you.
Jump over Giannis himself. That's the next step for him. Big deal there.
I think he should take a dive, but...
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Get a little Marcus Smart in you.
Yes.
I mean, hey,
you get Defensive Player of the Year for that.
I mean, Marcus Smart used to be known as the biggest flopper ever. Maybe he's kind of in people's heads with his defense, and now he's a Defensive Player of the Year. Yeah. He's using the fear of the flop to help him on defense, too. No reason that Pat Williams can't get to that level of basketball IQ as well. You know, there's a lot of tricks to the trade as well. He'll learn them in time.
I agree. Cody, will we see the last thing before we let you go? Do you think we'll see any adjustment to the rotation? We saw Kobe get 23 minutes. Jalen Green got 17. Derrick Jones Jr. got 10. And Tristan Thompson just 7 minutes. Do you think he'll change things up a little bit? And Io only had 9 minutes in the game. So could we see more of those guys, or do you think he'll leave things kind of as they were?
You know, I don't think we'll see drastic changes to the rotation minutes-wise. Like, I liked what Derrick Jones Jr. did just by way of being in the space of the Bucks. So maybe he even gets a few more Tristan Thompson minutes. I think if Io comes in and is sharp and looks like he can attack and be aggressive on offense, he can get more minutes than he did in game one. But, like, he was a non-threat on offense just completely in game one. I think he got beat on a defensive play, and Billy's just kind of like, you know, Kobe's out here, gives us more offense. But, like, I think as long as good Kobe's out there on the offensive end, you got to play him because this team needs scoring and three-point shooting, right? And Kobe was not awesome, but he was 5 of 10 from the field, 2 of 6 from three-point range, which, like, for the Bulls is like shooting 90%, it felt like, when you can make 2 of 6 three-pointers in that game one. It was such a defensive struggle. But I would tilt towards seeing much of the same idea from Billy Donovan. Big minutes again for DeMar, playing almost 43 in game one. Zach, I would expect to be in the low 40s if he's not in foul trouble. So maybe a few tweaks, but like, I like Derrick Jones Jr. personally more out there against the Bucks than I do Tristan Thompson. So maybe you see a few more minutes of that. And maybe if Io is a little better, you see him a little bit more. But otherwise, I think rotation-wise, like, Billy looks at game one, I think he has to be like, I like what the guys I put in there did for the most part when it wasn't shooting-related. And if it's the shooting that's the problem, right, like, you just got to kind of trust that that gets a little better, the guys you have out there.
Do you assume, and I know we kind of talked about this right off the top here, and I asked you if they missed an opportunity to steal a game. Is that the only opportunity you think they'll have to take a game in this entire series?
No, I think game three at the United Center is going to be a raucous environment. I think even if the Bulls are down 2-0, having that game on Friday night in front of the home crowd with the way the Bulls finally showed more heart and attention to detail on defense, I would think a game at home is going to be a really close game. And I would think that they would have a really good chance to win a game three at home, even if they lose game two. So there will be another opportunity here for the Bulls to play, I think, a really close game into the final minute against the Bucks. But they got to make winning plays, and these guys haven't been there before much for the Bulls, at least half of them, and the Bucks have been there in the Crucible again and again the last couple seasons and have that championship pedigree. So it's about making plays, and you would expect the Bucks to make more of them throughout the rest of the series in crunch time eventually. But I think it'll be competitive still moving forward.
It feels like it's been 10 years since I've talked to you, but I know it's only been a few weeks. I miss you, pal. Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, I mean, Bulls regular season basketball down the stretch felt like years, so I think we all understand.
Hey, but, you yelled at me for being minutes police, and it turned out I was right.
Well, I mean, are you going to be mad at DeMar playing 44 minutes in game two?
No, he has to. He has to. Like, now it's time to go.
Yeah, they might need Caruso to play 40, even though they don't want him to with his ailing back.
Yeah.
He was pretty darn good in game one, and they could use every extra minute they can get out of him.
Thanks, Cody.
Yep. Have a good rest of the show, buddy.
Cody Westerlund, you can catch him on 670thescore.com. Follow him on Twitter at Cody Westerlund. He's so good at basketball. I was right about the minutes police thing. By the way, I think I called Javonte Jaylen. I don't know if I said that, but in my head, I think I did. I was reading earlier a story about Jalen Green, who might make the all-rookie team over Herb Jones, who's everybody's favorite now. But if I said Jalen, sorry, it's Javonte Green. Anyway, at least I think, I don't know, maybe I didn't do it. I don't know. But in my head, I feel like I'm thinking about it too much. It doesn't matter. What does matter is the Bulls lost in game one of the series. But game two, tomorrow night on News Radio 780 WBBM, they'll be playing the Bucks in game two. Cubs are going to be on the score. They're always on the score. They're going to be on the score tonight, and they will be on the score tomorrow. We have, let's see, the Cubs, the Bulls, and the Sox are all going to be on at the same time at one point on Wednesday night. Going to be a busy sports night on Wednesday night, tomorrow night, here in Chicago. I'm Chris Ranji. This is Score Overnights, and I was alerted earlier yesterday that Mark Grody and Lawrence and Spiegel were just ganging up on me. I don't know what I did to them, but I need to hear this next on 670 The Score. It is Score Overnights. I'm Chris Ranji. Good morning to you. We are right now at this point halfway through the program, and at 5 o'clock, it'll be Mully and Haw. They'll be joined by Brad Biggs. They'll be joined by Lisa Byington with the Milwaukee Bucks and also Mike Florio. All of them going to be on the show this morning on 670 The Score. And like I said, you can visit with me today, 312-644-6767. We will get to your phone calls and your text messages. And any way you want to correspond. Also, I'm on Twitter at Chris Ranji. I'm on Instagram, too, at Chris Ranji. If you like photos and stuff, you can find them all there. So I minded my own business yesterday afternoon. Oh, and by the way, Cubs beat the Rays 4-2, in case you're just tuning in, wondering what happened last night. White Sox got rained out or whatever in Cleveland. Maybe snowed out. Game postponed. Doubleheader coming up in July. I'm minding my own business, trying to enjoy my Monday afternoon, when I receive a text message from a friend, and he says, they are just burying you right now. Lawrence and two other guys are burying you. And I realized that he's talking about Grody and Matt Spiegel. And I haven't heard it yet. Sean Sears found it for me. And we're going to hear it now. This is what happened during transition between Lawrence and the afternoon show yesterday.
But no.
Is Chris Ranji in there too?
He did get in, but that was sort of like what I call, that was like the trial run is what that was. They're like, we're just going to try some. It was like an experimental Hall of Fame is
some
what
might,
they did.
Some might call it first ballot.
Yeah.
But well, you could call it a trial run.
It was like, let's just try this, a trial run, rough draft, blueprint. So, and then so this year, 4 years later, this was the actual induction, the real induction in the hall. Actually, when I gave my little speech there, they build you up. They said, Mark Grody has done this. He's got a ring. They actually said that I have two World Series rings.
Saw that, and you let that stand.
I absolutely let that stand because I did cover the White Sox, but I never got a ring out of it. And they talked about, you know, all the things that I've covered. And so I thanked everybody. And then I said, you know, based on all those things that you just read off, how the hell did it take me the second Hall of Fame at ISU to get in?
That's a fair
so
question.
I thought it was a fair question. And then they told me, yeah, that was just a trial run last year. And, you know, Ranji volunteered. They were paying everybody $15 to come to ISU to get into the hall, and Ranji volunteered. So I felt better, and now I feel bad for Chris.
This MF-er. Are you kidding me? Is that what Mark Grody said about? Did he say that my 2016 induction into the Illinois State Broadcast Hall of Fame was a trial run? You know what that means? It means Grody has just become a horrible person. Now, Mark Grody has always been known as the nice guy around the station. Oh, that Mark, what a good guy. Oh, he's so nice. Oh, I love Grody. He's so happy all the time. Do those sound like the words of a happy, enjoyable person to be around? No. Those are the words of an egomaniacal butthole. And Grody, ever since he's been inducted into the Illinois State Broadcast Hall of Fame, that's exactly what he's become. Walking around with his trophy and his plaque all the time. I heard that he goes to the coffee shop, the Starbucks, downstairs in the Pedway, where all the people are walking by, and he sits at one of those tables that face the windows where all the people are passing by on the way to and from the metro to work. I heard that he sits down there with his trophy facing the window, seeing if anybody will notice. And you know what that's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic, despicable behavior from Grody. Let's call Mark Grody right now. Sean, dial him up. Let's see if he answers his phone. I know he's hosting the afternoons later today, right, with Spiegel? He's doing that. Okay. Well, call him up. Maybe he's still up right now. I want to talk to this jerk. He's probably not going to answer. Oh, I hate him. I'm so upset with Grody.
He's not picking up.
Can we get a voicemail at least?
Let's see.
I want to see if I can get a voicemail. I'm going to leave a voicemail for Grody. I've had it up to here with this guy. A trial run? It's called an inaugural.
When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Mark Grody, this is Chris Ranji. Keep my name out of your mouth! All right, hang up on this guy, Sean. I'm done with him. I'm done with this guy. All I've been doing for the last 17, 18-ish years that I've known this punk, I've been building him up. I've been promoting him. I've been telling people all the things that I said a moment ago. Oh, what a nice guy. What a great guy Grody is. Oh, I love him. He's my brother. He's a butthole is what he is. I hope he ends up in jail. Or I hope he gets an incurable rash. I hope that Mark Grody ends up with some kind of chafing in the area down there that you can't ever get comfortable, and there's no ointment on earth that'll fix it. I hope he ends up with one of those things. I hope that 5 years from now, when people talk about Mark Grody, it isn't, oh, you mean Illinois State Broadcast Hall of Famer Mark Grody? No, I hope that 5 years from now, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I know Mark Grody. He's the guy with the chafing that won't go away.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
God, he's the biggest. What an egomaniac this guy's become. He's lucky to be in the Hall of Fame. He's lucky that I went to bat for him. And they were looking for new candidates because really, let's be honest, in the inaugural class, they pretty much got everybody. There wasn't anybody else to put in. And no, I said, going back several years to the powers that be at the university, I said, hey, you guys need to keep an eye on this Grody fella. Maybe someday he'll be worthy of being in the Broadcast Hall of Fame at Illinois State University, the fine institution. And they were like, eh, all right, you know, we'll keep him on the radar. And then here he is, several years later, crapping all over the guy who made it happen for him. Who needs a friend like that? I'll tell you this, when he and I finally move in together, when he's asleep, I'm putting the cat up for adoption. I'm putting Dave on the market. So anybody listening to this right now, familiar with Dave the Cat, if you want Dave the Cat, as soon as I move in with Grody, when we get our place together, I'm putting the cat up for adoption. First bidder. You can say 50 cents. I don't care how much. You can have the cat. It's all yours. So Grody better start saying his goodbyes to Dave now, because as soon as we move in together, Dave is history. I mean, he's going to go on to live a nice, fruitful life, probably comfortable somewhere else. And Dave will probably be happy to not be living with such a raging jerk like Grody has become. I bet when Grody comes into the house, when he comes home after working with his diapers taped up over the vents so the people in the other apartments can't hear him, I bet when Grody comes in, Dave looks at him and says, I don't know you anymore. Why are you like this? I want old Mark back. I want the fun Mark back. Because this version of you is the worst version of you, Mark Grody. It's a real shame. I feel bad that it's come to this. 312-644-6767 if you want Dave the Cat. I'm giving him away. That's what you get, Mark. You can't take care of the people you love. And the people who love you, you don't deserve them in your life. Dave is gone, and he's going to be better for it. I'm Chris Ranji on Score Overnights.
All I can say is, meow.
Lawrence Holmes, live from Chicago, middays noon to 2.
We probably didn't give them enough credit that they could play a game with the Bucks. But watching them get dirty, you know, you saw them. They had the patches of hula hair. You got to get mean. You got to get angry. We saw a little bit of that defensively. You caught the Bucks slipping, and you didn't make them pay for it. You're not getting that in game 2.
Lawrence Holmes, live from Chicago, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. In Odyssey Station.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by DuckDuckGo, Privacy Simplified.
For patients diagnosed with a brain or spine condition, Russia's number 3 ranking from U.S. News and World Report means more than just being third best in the nation. It means access to the latest clinical trials, being among the first in the nation using life-saving technology, and treating complex conditions, from epilepsy and brain tumors to movement disorders and stroke, with the most advanced treatments available. In other words, a number 3 ranking means a dedicated team of providers who partner to provide you with the best possible results. And that can mean a world of difference in your care. Visit Rush at locations in Chicago, Oak Park, Oak Brook, or Aurora, where our team can tailor a treatment plan for you. Or learn more about brain and spine care at rush.edu/choose-rush.
Quick three ball right side. Nope. Pulled down by Giannis, and that's going to do it. Game one going to the Milwaukee Bucks in the final from Milwaukee 93-86.
And the Bulls, and they lost game one to a very good Milwaukee Bucks team. And that was Swirsky on the Score on Sunday night, 93-86 final. And game two happens tomorrow. Again, a reminder, game two is on News Radio 780 WBBM. Cubs will be playing on the Score. Mully and Haw coming up at 5 o'clock. Brad Biggs, Lisa Byington, and Mike Florio will be on the show later today. I'm Chris Ranji on Score Overnights as we forge ahead. We're going to get back to your calls and your text messages at 312-644-6767. So far, we have zero takers for Dave the Cat. Nobody wants Grody's cat, Dave. And it sounds like what's happening is they don't want the cat because they believe Grody and his new Hall of Fame self, his egotistical, self-centered, I'm better than everybody else self, has maybe rubbed off on Dave. And they don't want a cat who's already selfish to begin with, because that's cats by their true nature, just selfish, selfish animals. They don't want one that's gotten even worse because of the behavior of his owner. So it sounds as of right now like nobody wants Dave the Cat in their home, because Dave the Cat is essentially an extension of Mark Grody. Earlier today, or yesterday, I should say, on the Dan Bernstein Show, Bill Wennington, you might know him as Will Wennington. I'm such an idiot. But then again, so is Shane Reardon. If you haven't heard the story, I think most people have heard it by now. When I was on the show in St. Louis during The Last Dance, I asked Shane for Bill Wennington's phone number so we could have him on the show to talk about The Last Dance. And he gave me Will Perdue's number. And I texted with Will. And I said, hey, Will, can you come on the show? He said, sure, but by the way, or I called him Bill. And he said, I'm sorry, but I go by Will. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. I then thought that Bill Wennington suddenly went by Will Wennington? And I said, oh, okay. I thought it's been Bill this entire time. It's weird to have a name change this late in life. But I guess Diddy did it. And so did Kanye.
That's
and
insane,
so we had. Have you heard this story?
No, I did not know the story.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is, it's a whole thing. So I'm texting with who I thought was Bill Wennington, and it was Will Perdue, because Shane gave me the wrong number because he's an idiot. And, you know, I called him Bill, and he's like, actually, I go by Will. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess Bill Wennington has a different name now. And so we had him on the show, and the host, my co-host, introduced him as Will Wennington, and it was Will Perdue. And we did the whole interview, and it didn't occur to me, like, hey, that's not Bill Wennington's voice. Did the whole thing, and after the fact, like, Will Perdue played it off great. He didn't even flinch. He just rolled with it and pretended to be Bill Wennington the entire interview. And good for him. Like, he played it right, and we're stupid. And I didn't realize it until later that night, and I asked Shane, like, hey, what is going, like, real quick, did you give me the wrong phone number or something? And he freaked out, and he's like, oh, my God, I did. I'm sorry. It was a whole nightmare. At any rate, Will Wennington was on with Dan Bernstein yesterday talking about the Bulls in the midst of their series with the Bucks.
Bill, that just felt like the one they had to have to me. I was surprised that they climbed back in it the way they did, and I kept thinking as this was going, this is the one. If you're going to get one, you got to get this one. And that's why, as much as I want to be positive about how well they played, it still hurts.
Yes, Dan, I agree with you 100%. I always feel that the first game on the road is the one you got to get if you're the away team. And I'm going to be honest, other than the first quarter, I thought that Milwaukee was primed for the pick-in. They did not shoot the three ball well. They shot just 26% from behind the three-point line, and they're a better three-point shooting team than that, and they do shoot a lot. But we actually one-upped them on that. We only shot 18% from behind the three-point line, and we actually shot almost as many. We won less than they did. So that's it was right there. And if I honestly feel that if the Bulls came out with a little more energy in the first quarter and matched their defensive efforts from what they did the rest of the game, they would have won the game. But unfortunately, you got to play four quarters, and that's kind of what happened last night.
I hate to blame the shooting woes of Nikola Vucevic too much, because we ask him to do everything. It's always like, well, run it through Vooch. Okay, and then we do. And then in this offense, he's a really important floor-spacing three-point shooter. And it's like, well, make those. It's like, well, how many things can we reasonably ask him to do while also being a facilitator and fulcrum in their offense? And if he's going to start on a side of the floor where he starts pounding it and backing down, that's great. I have no problem with that. But they can't stand there and watch. I want to see down screens, up screens, diagonal cuts. You know, get it moving, because we're not going to the Bulls aren't going to win these matchups based on a lot of individual talent as much as they are a lot of this movement and action and activity.
Damn, Dan, you sound like you've been listening to me.
I have been. I listen to everybody, and I watch the games.
I agree 100%. With what you just said. And I'm not just blaming Vooch, because when DeMar has the ball or Zach has the ball, what's everybody doing? Standing around watching. And there has to be ball movement. And I hate to throw back to, you know what, forget it. I'm not going to go back to the Bulls teams I played on. Let's go back to the Dallas teams I played on. Unless we were running an isolation where they had James Donaldson and or myself and a forward standing remember the old isolation plays
yes.
teams used to run where two guys would stand at the hash mark and watch? Unless we were running that play, guys were moving on the weak side. And there was a play last night where Tristan Thompson put the ball on the floor. And he was driving down the side of the lane on the right side of the floor, and Coby White and Zach LaVine were on the wing out on the sideline and the corner on the sideline. They were within 8 feet of each other. And Tristan got hammered by three guys, threw the ball back out, and they were so close together and not moving, they couldn't do anything. So we had to set the offense back up. And that's not just with when Vooch has the ball, everyone's watching, when everyone has the ball. And I think the team really has to move more. And they did at the beginning of the season. I think that's one of the things why we got off to such a great start at the beginning of the season. They did do that well. They played off of each other. They moved. They engaged the defense on the weak side of the floor so that if they weren't paying attention to where their man was, they got lost and the Bulls took advantage of it. But I feel with all the injuries and everything that happened, and then obviously with DeMar having that great stretch of 9 games of 30 or more points, we kind of got marred into this, like, well, let's sit and watch and see what he does because he's amazing. And he was. But especially in the playoffs, teams key on that. No matter who has the ball, they're going to key on it. You have to have that away from the ball body movement, and you also have to have ball movement, passing. And the number I like to watch is assists, because two things are happening if you have assists. One, you're moving the basketball. Different guys are touching the ball. But two, you're making shots. So to me, that's a really big number. And the Bulls have really suffered on those numbers all season long. One, because they don't pass the ball as much. We get the ball. We come in. There's one pass to get the ball to Vooch, or one pass to get the ball to DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine. And then it's kind of one-on-one basketball at that point. And I really feel they have to have a little bit more movement with the basketball, and then guys moving away from the ball, not just watching, so that the defenses can't key on those guys when they do have the ball.
Yeah, the number I look at, and there are websites that track this too, is that the hockey assist, the secondary assist, the pass that makes the pass. And very often, the basket has occurred because of a concurrent movement with the first pass. And it isn't just, I have the ball, you go over here. It's somebody on the weak side recognizing the ball just went over there. My guy's got his head turned, and then it's bang, bang, and you got a basket.
Correct.
And that's where I see some of the Patrick Williams stuff coming in, because I'm at my wit's end. I got to tell you, I see all the talent in the world, incredible body, if terrific ability and want to and professionalism, and he's a good kid. I know in this system, with all those guys on the floor and that starting unit, it's hard for him to find places and ways to play harder. But some of those cuts, get a lob, you know, go hard and make it impossible for someone to not see you open. And I don't see enough of it.
I would agree. And, you know, everyone's going to point at the 35-point game against Minnesota, but he had the ball in his hands a lot of the time. He was the guy. And when you got DeMar and Zach and Vooch on the floor, he's not going to be the number one guy. So he has to play off of those guys and not be afraid to get in the way, or to understand that when they drive the ball, yes, especially right now, teams are collapsing on him, making it really hard. And someone has to cut to the basket or move to an open space to make themselves available for an easy pass, not a pass that's going to be thrown through two or three guys, but a kick out to the corner quick, a kick under the baseline. Watch what other teams are doing to the Bulls. And that's how you see what teams are doing in basketball that pass the ball now, because the Bulls are switching a lot and they're rotating around and they just move the ball. You talk about the hockey pass, the pass, the assist to the assist. That's what's happening. They're just moving the basketball faster than the Bulls can rotate out and to the open man, and they're getting wide open looks. And not only are those wide open looks at the three-point line, they're under the basket. They're all over the place because teams are just finding where those gaps are where the team can't rotate quick enough to.
You mentioned Tristan Thompson and the play he was involved in. This is a guy that they got off the buyout scrap heap. And you got – there's two enormous people on the Bucks, and I know that they need Thompson's size, but is there any way you see from a coaching perspective that they can mitigate that combination, the size combination of Antetokounmpo and Lopez?
Well, I thought in the second half, until the very end, when Lopez got big again, all of a sudden it was part of his game, they did a great job of surrounding Lopez and making it really difficult for him to do anything. So when he caught the ball in the paint, there were three or four guys in the paint around him. And that's really what you have to do, force him to pass the ball back out, and then hopefully he can rotate back out. But you have to have bodies on him because he is just so much bigger than anyone else. And you put Vooch on him, all right, you got 7 foot against 7 foot. But you can't let him get near the basket. You have to force him to be a perimeter player. And I'm going to be honest with you, I think Brook Lopez wants to be that at times. Mm-hmm. And if he is that, then he's not hurting the Bulls as much because he hurt us in the first quarter. He had 11 points. He got the ball around the basket, and he was just able to finish. He was unbelievable in the way he was finishing at the rim, and the Bulls have to do a better job in that. And they did do that until the last couple of minutes of the game when he Lopez decided to get big again, and the Bulls had gone away from stopping him as much down low. So I think the Bulls can do it. Giannis is always going to be an issue, but again, you have to not let him get to the basket. When the Bulls went small ball, Giannis recognized that. And as soon as the Bulls switched, he took DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine right down in front of the basket and tried to score on him, just took him right down where he knew he had the advantage. So you're really going to have to change up your defenses and not let them get a rhythm to their offense where it's going to be different guys coming at them all night long. And I think the Bulls did that for the most part in the last three quarters where they doubled down, and you saw Alex Caruso being huge defensively, just getting down, and he was the guy going a lot. But it just has to be consistent for 48 minutes.
What did you think of the 30-foot three-pointer by Zach LaVine at the end? And I've been struggling to define good shot versus bad shot for him because he makes a lot of what my internal computer classifies as a bad shot. But that's, he doesn't see it as a bad shot because he makes a lot of them. So I need to adapt to that. I know that's just part of his game. But look, this is the end of a playoff game. This isn't December against the Pistons. So how do we determine, is it a good shot or is it a bad shot?
You're 100% correct. In my mind, that was a tough shot. It was, you know, you're coming down the stretch. Was he going for a 2-for-1 real quick? Time running out, getting it, and he's taken those shots before and made them. That's great. But there were many shots like that taken during the game that I thought were, I'm not going to call them bad shots. Let's call them difficult shots. Mm-hmm. Made by Zach, Vooch, DeMar. And sometimes they go in. And when they go in, it's just a great play. Like if that went in, we'd be jumping up and down for joy. This is phenomenal. Look what he did. Oh, my God. Zach LaVine's our hero again. And unfortunately, we got to live with that because that's what they do. Now, at the time, we only needed a two. There was enough time. We scored 2 points quick. We're down one. We stop them. Then we have a chance to hit the lead and take our chances. I mean, we could second guess it all night long now. But is it tough? A tough shot? Yes, it was. It didn't go in. Would I have liked to see more because of our 3-point shooting percentage at that time? Wasn't good by anyone on the team. Much, you know, Zach ended up being 2-for-10, but I believe at that point he was 2-for-9 when he missed that shot. So
that's Bill Wennington with Dan Bernstein on The Score yesterday. You can hear the entire interview at 670thescore.com. Better yet, download the Odyssey app. It's free, and you can listen to the station wherever you are, whenever you are, and you can go back and listen to the podcasts of all the shows as well. We'll recap what happened in the Cubs game last night as they beat the Tampa Bay Rays at Wrigley Field, a cold and snowy Wrigley. Last night, 4-2 final score. I'm Chris Ranji on Score Overnights.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.